London calling. This is London calling on Longwave. London calling. This is Westminster.
I am not an American. I am a free man.
Calm down. I'm okay. With a combat unit, it's armed with automatic weapons.
Come on, Mrs. Jones. You've got to go to your second job now. You've got to earn extra money to pay the bedroom tax.
I'm very lucky. I've got a second job in a chemical plant. Yeah, I'm making fluoride for Syria. They're shipping it to Syria.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
My lords, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to join Chris Everard in an undisclosed location deep under Buckingham Palace in Winston Churchill's war bunker.
Let's never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories.
God damn it, boy! These Brits are coming to get us!
Welcome, my friends, to the Silver Neverland.
My husband and I are not amused.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
Deep from inside the former communist bloc, where we now torture American citizens in Poland and the Balkan states, we're tuning in to the Chris Everard Show.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Chris Everard, and we are broadcasting live on the Truth Frequency. Welcome back. This is Chris Everard broadcasting live from London. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the Truth Frequency broadcast for this Sunday. I'm broadcasting live from London. This is Chris Everard. And I'd like to thank Chris and Cherie for working so hard this week and actually improving the Truth Frequency network system, because we've got a lot of live listeners from all over the planet tuning in directly on Facebook. And if you go to my Facebook page, be careful because there's lots of fake versions of me, you'll be able to actually listen directly to this show directly on Facebook. You don't need to go to any other website. Now, today I'm going to be giving people an update about what's been going on with regards to the poisoning of the entire Pacific Ocean. That's exactly what's been going on. It's been getting more and more polluted with plutonium, rotting nuclear submarines, which are sitting on the seabed. There were atomic bombs and hydrogen bombs blasted. They actually even exploded and vaporized Pacific islands in the 1950s. This has been done by the British government. It's been done by the French government as well. A Rainbow Warrior ship, there's about three or four of these Rainbow Warrior ships, they're operated by Greenpeace, was docked in Auckland Harbour, and it was bombed by the French security services, the French version, if you like, of MI6. That happened in New Zealand, and today I have a guest, Mr. Vinnie Eastwood, who is a genial type of chap, and he's a broadcaster like me, and he's interviewed lots and lots of people on his radio show. I just want to see whether Vinnie can hear me. Vinnie, can you actually hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's nice to have you on the show. Just before we came on live onto the Truth Frequency, you were telling me that three of the top dudes in New Zealand politics.
Not three of the top three, but the top three.
Oh, the top three. The top three. And they are all Freemasons. And is that actually, you know, kind of public information that's been published in, like, major news feeds in New Zealand?
Well, not saying that three of them are. It has been on mainstream news. There was a mainstream article about how Freemasonry is dying, saying that John Banks, who was the leader of the coalition for the current New Zealand national government, was a Freemason. We have a picture of John Key on freemasons.org.nz, the very front page of him delivering Freemasonic scholarships to people. And we also had another television broadcast as well, where a member of the public asked the current mayor, Lord Mayor of the Auckland Super City, Len Brown, if he was a Freemason on television, and he didn't say no.
Well, fair enough. Yeah, I mean, you know, if anyone is listening to this broadcast, and you know, there's lots of people waking up and they stumble on these broadcasts and they stumble on me on things like YouTube, and I'm sure they stumble across your YouTube interviews with various authors and people that you've done in the last couple of years, Vinny.
Yeah.
What I'd like to say to those people that have just woken up is that, you know, there are many governments around the planet where the top jobs are really basically you know, you can't actually become one of the top people unless you've gone to the right kind of school, unless you're a member of the right kind of secret society, or you've been to the right type of university. And in England, we've got this phrase called the old boy network. Do you say the same thing in New Zealand?
Yeah, we call it the old boys club.
Yeah.
It started a while back. In fact, funny you should mention that. I was talking with one of my listeners and supporters last night, and he used to go to boarding school. And all of these kids were all the daughters, all of the sons, sorry, of doctors, lawyers, judges, high-level politicians. So it's a self-reinforcing, self-perpetuating system of scumbaggery, more or less.
Yes. I think the thing that I've seen in recent years is that, luckily, in terms of big business, I'm talking about multi-billion-dollar corporations, there's been a bit of a digital revolution. And luckily, we've got a few very big corporations that aren't the bosses seem not to be members of this kind of old boy network. A good example would be Apple, where Steve Jobs was a vegetarian, he was a Buddhist, and he spoke openly about his experiences with LSD. And you can't, you know, kind of, I can't really think that a boss of, say, one of the big established old-fashioned Victorian merchant banks would ever speak openly or be a Buddhist or be a vegetarian.
Well, you never know. I've got a favorite saying, it's a tangled web we weave, a tangled, tangled web indeed. And you know what? I can't actually pin most things down. Like, you have certain behavior patterns by which you can recognize a form of scumbaggery, right? Like, somebody gets caught in a lie, or they steal something, or whatever. That's what connotes scumbaggery. Not whether or not they're open about doing LSD, or or things like that. I mean, because, what was his name? Steve Jobs, I read his book, Icon, is a biography, and yeah, he was a pretty whacked out dude. Extremely creative, which means he's probably not a psychopath, and very single-minded, very driven. He fits the classic profile of a entrepreneur, maybe perhaps a slightly narcissistic entrepreneur, but an entrepreneur nonetheless. And quite literally, without his amazing empire, I wouldn't have this really great 27-inch iMac in front of me for which I make all of my radio shows and make all of my videos. In fact, ironically, I had somebody criticize me the other day because now I've got two 27-inch iMacs that are powerful enough to edit HD video. And they say, well, why didn't you contact X person who can build you a computer that will last 10 times as long, blah, blah, blah. You're giving money to the slave labor, etc. You, it's like, come on, right?
Yeah.
If I buy a Kalashnikov, okay, does that mean I'm supporting the Russian military? What if I use that Kalashnikov to defend innocent people from, say, a tyrannical police state or something? Right? Well,
that's a good point. That's a very good point because, you know, they what happened, there was a bomb somewhere. Oh, yeah, the Boston Marathon. This is going back a little while. It's just, you know, fairly recent bomb attack. And obviously they blamed the bomber. But when Sandy Hook took place, they blamed guns rather than the actual person who was responsible for the shooting. I'd like to say to the listeners, by the way, that Sandy Hook, the actual school, has been bulldozed and it doesn't exist any longer.
Whoa.
Did you know that? Did you know that, Vinny?
No.
There's photographs. If you can actually look it up on Google Earth. I mean, you can confirm everything that I'm telling you. Don't just accept everything that I tell you as, you know, verbatim truth. But you can actually do a web search, or you can do a Google Map search, or now there's Apple Maps, apparently, which is eaten into the Google Map market. And you can, you know, type in the coordinates, or you can look at Sandy Hook, and you'll see that the school no longer exists.
Wow.
At all.
Now, you know, that fits the profile with a cover-up. And I think it was like days after the shooting, even on the day of the shooting, there were reports coming out of actors and all of this other kind of stuff. So yeah, it's a real suspicious one. And I don't know, when you become a person like me, who, you know, philosophizes and conspiracy theorizes and whatnot, what it is basically pattern recognition. Okay, certain symptoms, certain incidents, certain phrases, ways of doing things indicate other things that are going on that aren't being explicitly talked about. And I think your game, what was it you talked about on my show, is opposite game, when you watch the news and you repeat
the truth
back.
The truth reversal game.
Yes. And, you know, that's basically how life is. That's how fracked up the world is. Somebody was telling me last night, oh, it's got to change, we've got to do something. And I said, well, that's true, you do have to do something. And they goes, but what do I do? And I go, well, let me ask you something. What currently about society is fracked? The answer is anything and everything. So what can you do about it? And the answer is the same. Anything and everything you can.
Yeah. I mean, I should say to the listeners that the truth reversal game, anyone can play that. All you need is a TV with any news report from the mainstream media. And basically everything that they tell you, what you do is you just reverse the meaning of it. And not every time, but about 90% of the time, which is a very, very high, turnaround, is that when you reverse what they've told you, that is usually much closer to the reality of what's going on. And I just want to say to people that they don't call TV programming for no reason.
Yeah. I mean, here's the news in a nutshell. Today, somebody died, and it was really terrible, and you should be afraid. And also, somebody committed crimes, and it was really terrible, and you should be afraid. And also, here's a fluffy kitten.
Yeah, that's right. It's basically a smorgasbord menu of fear. And, you know, the underlying message on the BBC, I don't know whether this is the same with New Zealand TV mainstream channels. In England, the main kind of subtext of every news report from the BBC is that You need politicians. You need the government and you need the police, because if you didn't have the police and you didn't have the government and you didn't have all these marvelous politicians, then your life would be ruined by crime.
As if they're not the criminals already.
That's right.
So
that's right.
If it I get that- elected the Prime Minister of New Zealand, first of all, I'm going to run as a representative for the Clown Party. Okay, I'm going to have a big wig and red shoes and red nose and the whole gig, stand up there and along with all the other candidates, and say, vote for me, everybody. I'm way less corrupt than the rest of these clowns. And then I'll take off my wig, take off the clown suit, take off the shoes, and underneath will be really, really clean, shaven, nice-looking suit, tie, dress shoes, the whole nine yards. Everything that people think connotes authority and trustworthiness. And then I'll tell them, I only want to pass three pieces of legislation, and they will be the last three pieces of legislation that New Zealand will ever pass. Firstly, when I'm elected Prime Minister, I will pass a law that will actually rename Minister of Parliament, Prime Minister, in fact, rename that word to Sinister. So you'll have the Prime Sinister, the Sinister of Foreign Affairs, the Sinister of Finance, the Sinister of Health, so that everybody will now know the true job of those people in those roles is to be sinister and evil and to do something terrible. And that way you sow the seeds of mistrust in the government so that eventually people will start to have to trust themselves through lack of default. Now, the second piece of legislation, which will be rammed through under urgency with no democratic accountability whatsoever, will be the Suppression of Scumbaggery Act, where a new government department with zero funding will be established to be staffed entirely by volunteers from the community, former private investigators, former police, activists, and so on and so forth, to investigate and be given the power to prosecute elements and agents of scumbaggery that are currently operating in this country that currently aren't held to account by our judicial system. For example...
Good one.
For example, people in the judicial system. And the last one... will be the final piece of legislation, which will be the Suppression of Any Further Legislation Act. So no frickin' law can ever be passed again to encroach upon our freedoms. Thank you.
Wow. Wow, that is great. I mean, those three things there is, you know, I tell you now, the People Power movement in Thailand, they're asking for the entire government to resign and to be replaced by their own People Power kind of parliamentary kind of group. And it's, you know, one of the things that always strikes me as being suspicious is a minister of health will be the minister of health, you know, for a couple of years, and then they'll end up being the minister of transport. And then a couple of years later, you'll see that they've ended up, you know, in the European Parliament for a couple of years, and then they'll come back and they'll be, you know, the minister of some other kind of ministry. None of these people have any qualifications whatsoever. Yeah. Why can't we have bus drivers actually sitting in the Ministry of Transport in all these governments around the world saying, you can't do that. I've been a bus driver for 25 years and this is what I think you should be doing. Why can't we have experts?
Well, frontliners.
Why can't we have members of the public?
Well, we already have real experience. Well, we already do have experts running everything. How's that working out for us? Apparently not well. What we need is frontline people. Okay, frontliners. I spoke to a CIFS worker, CYFS, Child Youth and Family Services New Zealand, our equivalent of CPS, the Child Pedophile Ring of the United States. It's very similar here. And she told me about the leadership structure that nobody, repeat, nobody that has ever been the head CEO of Child Youth and Family Services New Zealand has ever been a caseworker.
Oh, ever. Really?
Not one. Okay?
Yeah. Which
they have zero experience of how to actually run the organization, which is the reason why they got the job in the first place. Because if they were a caseworker whose job it was to actually help people and they weren't one of the pedophile scum whose job it is to rape kids, I think they'd run the organization just a little bit differently and maybe squeeze out the scum.
Yeah. Well, obviously, the other thing is that a lot of these government departments do not want experienced people anywhere near those ministers, because an experienced person, like I said, like a bus driver, say, for example, working at the Ministry of Transport, would be able to work out that, first of all, none of those ministers know what they're talking about. And secondly, they'd be able to work out, hey, there's kind of scams going on and there's corruption going on.
Yeah. Well, hence the reason why you name them all the, you know, the Sinister of Transport, because then he goes for the job at the EU Parliament and they say, what's this? You were the Sinister of Transport. I don't want anybody who's sinister working for me. Bugger off, mate. Mm. So it'll corrupt their job opportunities. Okay. Now, we've got this bill being passed in New Zealand called the GCSB bill, the Government Security Communications Bureau, which is an offshoot of the NSA. In fact, they actually have an office of the NSA in their building in Wellington, the capital of New Zealand.
Really?
Right. Yeah.
I see.
All right. Now, their task is to surveil all activity of New Zealanders. All right? Looking for terrorism. Really? Okay. And I was thinking, okay, well, Mr. Key, who's our Prime Minister, used to work for the Federal Reserve Bank in New York for 2 years, as the head of the European bond and derivatives trade. What caused the 2008 financial crisis again? Never mind. We'll just elect somebody in 2008 that actually caused it to save us from it, of course. I'm going to come in and save you from people like me. And what he does is he comes out and he says to everybody, I'm trying to protect you, I'm trying to help you, I'm trying to save you, you know, from terrorists, bad people, things like that. My question is, Mr. Key, why haven't you installed CCTV cameras in your bedroom and started up a live streaming website so that the citizens can watch you while you sleep?
Hmm.
You're doing it to us. How about you first?
Yeah, well, obviously the politicians don't like that kind of thing.
Well, I that a politician's job should be closer to the occupation of a prisoner. Okay, so you're under surveillance all the time. You have no freedoms, and you don't have any choice about what it is you're actually supposed to do in that job.
Okay? Absolutely. All right? I agree, because that'd stop people like Mr. Pickles, who's one of the British ministers in the British government, and he spent £52,000 of British people's money on biscuits.
Wasn't there also a dude who cleaned his moat with tax pounds?
Yeah, there's been two of those. There's been two, yeah.
How many moats, how many filthy moats are there in England, for frack's sake?
Well, a good question is how many members of the British Parliament actually live in castles that have moats around them? I think there's about three or four of them.
What are they trying to do? Castles. Protect themselves from the revolting slaves?
Yeah, of course. That's the whole idea of you know, what the aristocracy do. It's also what the Vatican have also done as well. Many of the Vatican monasteries that you see around Europe, a good example would be Montserrat. Montserrat Monastery is at the top of a mountain so that, you know, they can get on with their monastic duties, whatever you could say that they were, in complete secrecy. And a lot of the famous monasteries have very, very big, thick, kind of prison-type walls built around them. And obviously that's what the aristocracy have been doing with their castles and their forts. And, you know, that's basically part and parcel of the ruling elite. They're living in a bubble and they're separated from the normal working-class people.
Now,
and, you know, over the centuries and over thousands of years, this has obviously festered a class war. And, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, I write books and I do my documentaries and do broadcasts like this is because I'd like to see a coming together of all of the different classes and a general improvement in the social strata of all of the populations in all the countries around the planet. You know, this is what's really necessary.
Yeah, there's only two classes as far as I'm concerned, the elite and the slaves. And there's very few of the elite.
Yes, that's very true. That is. I mean, you know, there's 7.2 billion people on planet Earth. You know, the revelations of Mr. Ed Snowden is that 5.2 billion smartphones are tracked every day. Well, that's basically every smartphone in the world. And they obviously see the people as the enemy.
Well, it's because we are.
Well, I'm not an enemy of anyone, but...
yes, you are. You know, you're the enemy of anybody who wants to hurt and destroy and kill and maim and lie and frack the world up.
So yeah.
You become an enemy of the enemy of humanity by default if you have any humanity.
Yes. I see what you mean. That's absolutely true. You know, but I don't actually go out of my way to actually cause any problems. What I do is I just investigate things like Fukushima, and I investigate things like the ENIA, European Nuclear Agency. They're actually the Italian Nuclear Authority, and they were paying the mafia to dump nuclear waste in the Mediterranean Sea. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that I do. I agree with you. I mean, you automatically make enemies. You know, there are lots of people that send me threats all the time. But that goes with the territory. If I'm not investigating really fascinating stuff and I'm not, you know, helping to spread truth, I'm not doing my job properly.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a little break coming up. We'll be back here with Vinny in New Zealand in about 1.5 minutes. Welcome back. This is the Chris Everard Show, broadcasting live from London. And today we are being carried on FM by Radio Calabria in Italy. We're also going out on the medium wave from Stirling in Scotland, and we're broadcasting globally on the Truth Frequency Radio Network based in Colorado, and that is truthfrequencyradio.com. And my special guest is a broadcaster, a bon viveur, and an all-round nice geezer, and it's Vinny Eastwood, and he's live from New Zealand. Vinny, can you hear me?
I am. I am a nice geezer, kind of like the pyramids.
Now, I want to ask you, Vin, what do New Zealand people think of Obama? I mean, he's trying to start World War III. I mean, are the people in New Zealand actually aware that, you know, he's probably not actually properly qualified through birth for the job of president? I mean, did they know very much about Obama?
Have you ever heard of the phrase, the more things change, the more they stay the same?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so the question is, what do the American people think of Obama? What do the UK people and the Australian people think of Obama? They all think the exact same thing as the New Zealanders do. Why? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right, because we've got an international media that feeds everybody Obama BS.
Yes.
It's Obaminable. And I don't even quite comprehend why people don't see this until I recognise, oh, yeah, that's right. They got educated in public education. They weren't allowed to think from a very young age. That part of their brain atrophied so that they're not able to actually think about things that are concerning anymore, you know?
Well, yeah.
It's time for a fluffy kitten.
Hmm. Now, how many people are actually living in New Zealand now?
Roughly 4 million.
4 million, so it's less than the population of Ireland. But New Zealand, it's got two main islands. So are there any smaller islands in New Zealand?
Oh, heaps. We're an island chain nation. I mean, our two main islands are the North Island and South Island. It was real creative people who came up with them names. And further south, there is Stewart Island, which is our third largest. Then we've got Great Barrier Island, which is off the coast of Auckland, where I live. Wow. And Waiheke Island, which I used to live on for about 8 years. I grew up and there and went to Waiheke Island High School and all of that kind of jazz. And it was really lame. And it's a great place to go for a holiday. If you ever start living there, though, you best already be retired. Otherwise, you're going to get real frickin' bored.
It's bored. Okay, yeah, I'll remember that. Now, there is this Peter Jackson chap, and what he's done is he's actually put together a fantastic company called Weta Digital and a film studio in Wellington, and you've got all of the world's greatest filmmakers actually, you know, now flying into New Zealand, And he's gone and trained up his own kind of army of animators and prop specialists and construction people.
Oh, yeah.
And the Hobbit and quite a few other big films that have grossed. I think they're in the top three biggest films of all time in the last 10 years. Mm. They've either been partly made in New Zealand or wholly made in New Zealand.
Yeah, Avatar's a good example of that. I mean,
yeah.
We have the best animation studios. We've got this... when I say we, New Zealanders seem to think we're all together. We're really not. We're actually all just separate, infighting freaking clowns, basically. I mean, I don't want to insult my own people, but I just can't help myself because I have to tell the truth. And that's the difficulty of being awake and aware and having any idea what the hell is going on, is the frustration starts to set in that you know for a fact that so many people just don't freaking care. However, Weta Workshop is doing really, really well with the guidance of Peter Jackson, and they have extraordinary digital technology there. They've got this massive link cable where they can send like a terabyte per second to the United States.
Wow.
You know, something like something holy ridiculous cow. Like wow. that. It's like insane.
Right.
What's great about this is we're now getting a revitalized New Zealand film industry. And what's really awesome about that is that the massive Hollywood power brokers and everything came over to New Zealand before The Hobbit was signed off on to be made here. They were talking about, oh, we might make it in Eastern Europe instead because it might be cheaper. They're just BSing us because they knew they were going to make it here. The problem is New Zealanders have a thing called employment, okay? And when you're an employee, you get certain privileges. You get holiday pay. You get overtime. You get rights, etc. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And they didn't like that. So they came in and they said, okay, well, if we're going to make these movies here, you have to take away all of those employment rights for every single movie, for every single photographer.
Oh, I see.
Every single filmmaker in the entire country, and they all now have to work as private contractors, pay their own taxes, and have zero employment rights whatsoever.
Yeah, well, I've been making movies for many years, and I have to say that this is an unfortunate trait. In the old Hollywood system, the stars, the lighting directors, the animators, the graphic designers, the directors were all on wages, and they were all loyal, and they were all working under the wing of a studio, say, for example, like Paramount Studios, or, you know. And they even lived, actually, at the studio lots, and the studio would provide houses, and everything was run like a, you know, kind of happy family corporation.
Yeah, my former producer, Mitch Santel, if you ever want to have a producer, oh my God, he's just brilliant. And he said that there's only one thing that my job is. I mean, there's a whole lot of things that I do, but the main job, keep the talent happy.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, absolutely. But what happened is that, you know, those kinds of old-fashioned, what they actually used to call it, the studio system, that kind of got replaced, you know, with freelance contracting. And the thing about freelance contracting is it's great if you're making a movie and, you know, you're the person who's actually in charge. You just pull the people in and you don't have any legacy for their health benefits. You don't have any legacy for, you know, keeping that person employed. But what's happened is that I know people, this is absolutely verbatim truth. I know people with Oscars. I know people with BAFTA, British Academy Award, the BAFTA awards, like the British version of the Oscars. I know people with these top movie awards, and they've been unemployed for 18 months, or they've been unemployed for 2 years. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for the old-fashioned studio system. What I did notice the last time I was in Hollywood is that the independent studios that do run a family kind of corporate kind of family-run company as their studio, a good example would be Jim Henson, who passed away recently, and he's the inventor, along with Frank Oz, of Kermit the Frog, who's, by the way, Kermit the Frog's actually got one of those stars, you know, on the pavement in Hollywood, which is quite funny because he's a puppet. But the Jim Henson Company were run like a family, and of course they were extremely successful. There's not a country on the planet that's not heard of, you know, the Muppet Show. And then we had Lucasfilms, which has just recently been sold to Disney. Lucasfilms, everyone thinks, oh, Lucasfilms, yeah, George Lucas, it's Hollywood. Well, he was miles away from Hollywood. Lucasfilms was actually up in a vineyard closer to San Francisco than it was to Los Angeles. And, of course, they churned out a certain type of film, and it was made by a close-knit team of people. In more recent years, we've had Robert Rodriguez, who made Desperado, From Dusk Till Dawn, and he's making his movies in his own studio lot in Austin, in Texas, which is a very long way away from Hollywood. And his wife runs the company with him, and they've, in my opinion,
apparently he's editing.
They've made great films.
Apparently, he's editing those movies by himself, just in a little shack kind of thing. Just so you know, a few computers there. With the technology that we've got now, you can bring the ability of Hollywood movie making down to somebody who's only got a few grand in their pocket to buy a camera and a computer.
That's exactly what's happened. That is exactly what has happened, and you're absolutely right. Robert Rodriguez, he actually composes the music, he edits the films, he directs the films, he even has members of his family as extras, or even sometimes as speaking parts in some of the films. He keeps the budgets very low, by Hollywood standards they're very low, and he churns out what I consider pretty good quality films. And what he did is he converted his garage, and these films like Spy Kids, he's made films which have been, you know, when they were on release, they were in the top 10. He's made those films more or less on Macintosh and Pro Tools systems in his garage. Now, Hollywood, you know, is really undergoing this digital revolution right now. And, I can see that some of the studios are open to it. And I'm very glad that Peter Jackson and the Weta Digital people in New Zealand have actually managed to, you know, get, you know, part of that Hollywood production budgeting and financing to actually go into the New Zealand economy.
The unfortunate thing is it's at the expense of all the rights of everybody who works in the New Zealand economy in the film industry.
Yeah,
but you see, it's like that theory about God. With one hand he giveth, and with the other he taketh away. I saw a very great quote from 1976. I think his name was Sam Rockwell or something. I forget his name entirely, but it says, "The large print giveth, and the small print taketh away."
Oh yeah, that's very true. That's very true. But the thing about the rights of the employees, Vin, is that that's happened in lots of industries, and it's happened in lots of countries. It's not just New Zealand.
Oh, yeah, you know? Totally. And New Zealand, in large ways, according to Ian Wishart, who's one of our, I'd probably say the leading journalist in New Zealand. I mean, I'm definitely the lead conspiracy talk radio host, YouTuber in New Zealand. I think the closest mainstream media competitor that I've got on YouTube, I know you don't like YouTube, but they've got, I think, 7,000 subscribers, and I've got nearly 12,000.
Yeah, so well, that's very good.
That's the New Zealand Herald. They're the New York Times of New Zealand, and me by myself in my frickin' office at home with donated equipment and beating the crap out of them. I put an hour and a half's worth of video up every single day. You know,
wow, that's really good. And now, tell the listeners, Vin, who are the types of people that you've had as guests on your show in New Zealand? Because you've got a guest list, which is pretty impressive. You've had some of the most famous authors and researchers. Just give the listeners a little rundown of who you've had.
Well, first of all, I don't kind of discriminate, nor do I research my guests. So I just grab a guest, bring them on. Who are you, and what do you do? And then we have a conversation. You know, that's that way you keep it genuine and nice and good natured. I don't do ambush interviewing or anything like that. Ambush interviewing is something that I do when I'm in person. okay? If the Prime Sinister, for example, is there, I'll ambush him with a camera. If one of our terrible mainstream media people are there, I'll ambush them with a camera. I don't do that on my radio show. My radio show is for good people who have good messages and want a nice, friendly platform with which to share their ideas, like David Icke, George Norrie, Alan Watt, John Perkins, Foster Gamble, Jay Widener, Heinrich Palmgren, Lindsay Williams, Jordan Maxwell, Benjamin Fulford, Douglas Dietrich, Tila Tequila, Ian R. Crane, Andrew Brashago, Nancy Duterte, the Skeptical Psychic, Jan Irvin, John Rush, Rosa Corey, Dr. Janet Hull, Anthony Peake, James Corbett, Robert Menard, Cliff High, Sean David Morton, Sheriff Richard Mack, Catherine Albrecht, Sydney Singer, Ian Wishart, G. Edward Griffin, Stuart and Janet Swerdlow, Len Horowitz, Sherry Kane, Webster Tarpley, Bob Chapman, Steve Quayle, Rick Simpson, John Truman Wolfe, Dr. Rima Labo, Dr. Paul Connett, Anthony J. Hilder, Michael Shaw, Jason Burmis, Lorraine Murray, Reverend Ted Pike, Stan Deo, Kerry Cassidy, Jarrah White, Tamaiti, Cindy Sheehan. You know, the list just goes on and on and on.
Have you interviewed Helen Caldicott?
Let me Google it and find out, because I interview so many people I forget it. Okay, Helen.
Well, she's written a couple of fantastic books, which I can highly recommend to you and the listeners, which really expose and lay open the terrible pollution, bad management, and just insane evilness of the nuclear power industry. And Helen Caldicott, she's really sharp. She's really good. She runs a really, really good website. And when you see her lectures, you know, she just lays out the insanity of the nuclear power industry. A, B, C, 1, 2, 3. There's no pseudo weird kind of strange stuff with her research. These people are completely bonkers. They really are deliberately poisoning our planet. They're poisoning the sea, they're poisoning the soil, they're poisoning the sky. And there's no two ways about it. When you read Helen Caldicott's books, it really makes it very clear to people. And one of the things which I've been doing for years is I've been, you know, trying as much as I can to explain to people that it doesn't matter if a nuclear reactor is live or whether it's offline and it's not creating any electricity. The core is deadly radioactive, and it stays radioactive for 25,000 years. And once you've started it and built it, there's nothing you can do.
Well, you is why you probably shouldn't do it in the first frickin' place, which is exactly why they're doing it in the first frickin' place. You know what I'm saying? It's just... If it's bad, if it's insane, if it's crazy, if it's dangerous... It'll be justified, all right. All right. If it's good, if it's good, if it's helpful, if it's non-damaging, it'll be demonized.
Yeah,
and all covered up, and denied its existence in the first place.
I have to say about New Zealand, Vin, is that New Zealand is one of the very few countries that has got a bunch of government legislation which is basically banning these crazy, bizarre and insane nuclear power stations from actually setting up their businesses in New Zealand.
Oh, allegedly, all right? Because what we've got now is they want to start opening up national parks to mine uranium. So that's good. And then we've had a nuclear ban for 20 plus years, right? But unbeknownst to the New Zealand public, for the entirety of those 20 plus years, Australian mining corporations have been shipping yellow cake uranium through our ports on their way to be enriched in the United States. So everything they tell you is just BS. We had a ship run aground off the coast of Tauranga, a very, very nice little city that we've got here on the coast. called the Rena, which was registered in Lithuania. Why do you register ships in Lithuania? Oh, that's right. They don't have any safety regulations. And ships everywhere around the entire world are registered Lithuanian, even if they're owned by Americans, New Zealand, it doesn't matter. Because of these lax regulations.
They're also registered in Liberia as well.
Oh, wait, sorry. Nation. That's the one. Liberia,
oh, yeah,
not
Liberia is like an amazing place. If you've seen the Nicolas Cage movie, The God of War, The Lord of War, you'll see that there's a character there who, you know, is based on real-life dictators like Idi Amin, and he comes from Liberia. Liberia is actually, believe it or not, it's actually controlled by Buckingham Palace, and it's one of the major sources of rough diamonds, quartzite, and I think emeralds. I think it's rich in emeralds in Liberia as well.
All right, I got to remember Liberia. Just remember it's Siberia, except it's not true.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you're right. Liberia is where they register all the super tankers.
All right, so anyway, one of these big super tankers with umpteen carriages and containers all over it runs aground in New Zealand and splits in half. And you have all this thick Marmite-y type engine oil all over the place. What does the New Zealand government do within hours? Oh, they start spraying it with Corexit 9500.
Oh, really? Yeah, well, that is extremely toxic stuff.
Yeah.
Corexit is sometimes more toxic than the actual load which they're spraying. It's incredible.
Well, that's the intention. It's a biological chemical weapon, I think. That's my personal appraisal.
Oh, I agree. I agree. Corexit is just like any marine life that comes into contact and is directly sprayed. I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's a seabird, or it could be a seal, it could be a mammal, it could be a fish, it doesn't matter. It could be shellfish.
Albatross!
Yeah. The Corexit will actually reduce the lifespan of whatever sea life comes into contact with it. No question.
You know, I've got this real aversion. Like, people don't actually know anything about New Zealand, okay? I do. I know a lot about New Zealand, way more now than I did years ago, because I've interviewed activists, right? Mm-hmm. I figure activists are now the reporters, okay? Let's face it. Reporters are idiots, and they don't know what they're talking about. Those are the two general rules of thumb. Are you an idiot? Yes. Do you not know what you're talking about? Yes. Okay, you're going to be a reporter then. Here's a microphone. Here's a douchebag cameraman. Go out and ask stupid questions and don't demand answers, okay? Okay. Right, that's a reporter. Here's an activist. Okay, have you got anything to lose? No, they've already taken everything from me. Okay, here's a microphone. Here's a camera. Go out there. Be hardcore. Ask those tough questions. Do the investigation and report it back to people. What I've done with my show is I have taken those activists who previously get ignored, shoved to the side, demonized, locked up without trial. Everything that is bad that is happening to these people, I believe, is happening for a very specific reason, because they're onto something. Lancaster bomber pilots who were bombing Germany in World War II had a saying: when you're copping the flak, you're over the target. And I think that these people, who have nothing left to lose, who've already had everything taken from them, including their freedom, their businesses, their, in some cases, much of their sanity has in fact been taken from them deliberately. Mm-hmm. These people explain things, not in a soundbite, but in long form. And that's why I do like 2-hour interviews, Chris, because you can't encapsulate the scumbaggery within a few minutes. You know, I really get frustrated because I see great journalists like, say, Ian Wishart, for instance, being interviewed and having a debate with the Cancer Society for 12 minutes. 12 minutes! That's all they're giving him. I would have given him 4 hours, you know?
Yeah, well, I do have a saying. I know it's using foul language, which I try to avoid on air, but bullshit has all the best sound bites.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're going to try and explain to somebody who, you know, believes everything that they see on the mainstream news reports and are totally unaware of the pollution and the destruction that's been going on the planet. And they just trust supermarkets and they trust food corporations to be honest, you know, and they trust the educational system to teach their children. You know, when you try and have conversations with those people, you really cannot summarize what is going on, and you cannot summarize big subjects like propaganda and how subtle it is in TV commercials and television broadcasts. You just can't do that in like 30 seconds flat.
No, and I live life on rafts of different assumptions, and I think we all do. Here's two general assumptions. If you want to be close to the truth, but not actually know anything, okay? Assumption number one, if it comes from an official source, it's probably the exact opposite of what they're telling you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if it's called the health system, it's probably there to kill you. If it's called the defense system, it's probably there to attack people, right? Okay, so there's assumption number one. Assumption number two, if you can't make it in your own kitchen, then it's a soft kill bioweapon.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Now, we have a break coming up very soon in about 3 minutes. My guest today is Mr. Vinnie Eastwood. He's a gentleman from New Zealand. He's interviewed many of the leading activists and researchers around the planet. And we are broadcasting live on the Truth Frequency Radio Network, which is truthfrequencyradio.com. You can tune in directly from your Facebook page by simply clicking on our link. And we're also being carried on FM at Radio Calabria in the south of Italy. And we're also on medium wave AM in Stirling in Scotland. And my name is Chris Everard. And if you want to check out my website, my personal website, it's ChristopherEverard.com. And if you want to have a look at a trailer for a new motion picture documentary, which I've been working on for the last 3 years, which exposes three global empires of voodoo, and this is all real. I mean, none of this is made up. Then you can go to the Enigma channel, and that's enigmatv.com, and click on the link that says movies, and you'll be able to watch a pretty long snippet of my film. I've been doing it for 3 years, and there's the world's richest billionaires and trillionaires all featured in my movie. People like Nelson Rockefeller, Andrew Carnegie, who at one time was the richest man on the planet, and many other very, very prominent politicians and leading people are featured in my movie Spirit World. Okay, now we have a short break coming up. When we get back, we're going to be discussing fracking and lots of other interesting things with my special guest, Mr. Vin Eastwood, live from New Zealand.